Oh, thanks, Ken. And hey, Barb, glad you're here. Hey to everybody. So awesome to see everyone here today. This is awesome. I'm really grateful that you're all here and we're gathered sharing in our combined intention to awaken, to extend love to each other. So in that spirit, let's just go ahead and greet everyone on the board as we would if we were in a real church and say hi and extend your thoughts and greetings to each other. And as we do that, I'm going to turn the mic over to Lynn Johnson, who can play our opening song.
We are awakening to the calling of the mystic, awakening in the flowering of the heart. Everybody here melting into presence, overflowing effervescence, rising in love.
Thanks, Lynn. Hey, I just want to now move into our statement of purpose for our organization, Awakening Together. And it is that we are an assembly of equals joined in common purpose, awakening to one true self within an appearance of many faiths, many cultures, and many symbols. We seek to discern one truth and rest in its embrace. And today, as I was contemplating the different, well, I did this throughout the week, but contemplating the different values, I came to me that the third core value is what I want to present and highlight today out of the five core values that our church has. And this is that we accept one true self, which is one presence or being, non-dual, without beginning or end, and absolutely changeless. We live this value by practicing letting go of the belief in the individual self as who we are. And that is indeed what happens as we let go of that false self and we discover the real that does remain. So the announcements for this week, we have three. The first big announcement is really exciting. We have now opening and accepting registrations for the 2017 Fall Retreat. And that is going to still be at our location that we had this year at our in Colorado Springs, the Franciscan Retreat Center. And there's going to be three presenters. And the first one is going to be Gina Lake. And, of course, she did the 8-week miniseries, Busting the Illusion, back in June here in the Sanctuary. So some of you are already familiar with her. Or if you weren't, you know, get more familiar. And, of course, Regina is going to be kind of the middle segment, the second retreat. And the third retreat is going to be with Bob Ferguson and Tess Hughes. Now, Bob wrote a great book called The Listening Attention, which I did read, and they're just awesome. Really, really in alignment with the teachings of Awakening Together and practice and being, and just awesome, awesome book. It's a really inspiring book if you want to get it. It's cool stuff. So, again, you can sign up for, you know, all of them, one of them, two of them. A lot of people, I was fortunate enough to go to all three this last year. That was a really awesome experience. I definitely want to do that again. And it's going to be in the same time of year, October 20th to 29th. So that'll be 9 full days, a week plus 2 days. So it'll cover 2 weekends. The second announcement is about tonight, starting tonight. This is actually a first for a speaker spotlight. We're going to be highlighting our own assistant sanctuary director, Cheryl Kaplan. And this is going to be, just to mention to you, Cheryl was actually the founder of the Weekend of Freedom retreats that some of you have gone to. They've actually been going on for about 5 years. Her and a group of other people have put those on, and it's just been really amazing. Mostly Course in Miracles-centered retreats, but I think it's branching out a little bit this year. And then after that, at 9, there's going to be a fifth installment of Regina's mini-series, Awakening at Home. And these are some of the same topics that she presented during the retreat, this Franciscan Center in Colorado Springs, just a few months ago. So the third announcement today is going to be about the radio, and it is going to be coming down this weekend, Friday and Saturday, December 16th and 17th. This is because Ken Gibson and his wife, Rebecca, are moving from California to Pueblo. Yes, it is happening. They are going to be moving to Pueblo. And it's going to be back up again at 9 on Sunday, the 18th. And then it'll be back on its 24-hour schedule. So exciting stuff going on. So look forward to just being a part of that in spirit anyway. I'm not moving to Pueblo now, but I look forward to connecting with everyone there, and I think it's really neat that's happening. So let's just take a minute now after our announcements and just sort of go within and do a prayer. Dear Spirit, dear God, dear awareness, I'm so grateful that I'm here with others of similar mind, of similar desire, and love of God, and love of Spirit, and love of truth for the sake of truth, that we gather together and build our willingness and build our desire to turn in and to face and to move past the false, so that we can exist and be in the bliss and the love that is real. Despite all the difficulties and all the circumstances and all any distractions that may come along, we affirm that they will pass by quickly, powered by the collective energy of our practices, of our desire, of our willingness, into the embrace of that Spirit and that love. Amen. And now we're going to move into the reading. We have our very own Reverend Carrie Christensen here, and she is in the room as Yawina, right there, about midway down, for me anyway. And I felt guided to go to the Sufi. It is the Sufi Book of Life. It is part of the teachings that we incorporate into the MPP program during a Sufi course. And it's got a series of pathways. And the book was never recommended that you sort of read it end to end. It's sort of a still your mind and open the intuitive message type of practice that you're supposed to do with this book. And there's only about 2 or 3 pages per, sort of, they call them pathways or snippets. And when I was on the phone with Carrie talking about some other things, I went ahead and sort of did a practice there right with her during the phone call, and that's what gave me the whole topic for this week's gathering. So it kind of happened right during that same time, because she asked me, so what are you talking about this Sunday? So I answered her question right then and there. So I thought it was good to go ahead and ask her to be the reader, and she agreed. So that is what she will be reading, is from the Sufi Book of Life. And this is a very specific pathway. It's number 96, The Real That Remains. Turning it over to you, Carrie.
Yeah, so good morning, everybody. Delighted to be here with you all. And thank you, Jay, for giving me the opportunity to read this. I'm really delighted to be reading this for us. It's a beautiful passage, and I think you all are going to love it. So, hi, Barb. Oh, you know what? I'm going to say something funny. My moniker here, it's for some reason people want to pronounce it Yowena. It's Yowena. So anyway, it's kind of goofy and it doesn't really matter, but I just thought I'd say it. So yeah, let's get into this. And, you know, I think you guys probably all do this, but let's just close our eyes and, well, I won't because I'm reading, but, and really let it sink in because it's lovely. The real that remains, and it's a quality of God, Al-Baqi, I hope I'm pronouncing it properly. When you are guided to this pathway, take the opportunity to identify with what remains in you after all superficial appearances and masks have dissolved. When you have released your attachment to everything you do and accomplish. The pathways of the heart invite us down many seemingly contradictory paths that all lead to one goal, the discovery of our real self. What this means is difficult to communicate. We know that it has to do with letting go, with surrender, with learning, even under the most trying conditions of life. We also know that it means acting fully with passion, courage, and sometimes even abandon at the right times. And yet we can take none of this as a motto, moral, or philosophy of life. Where does it all leave us? For the Sufi, the spiritual life involves gradually letting go of everything we identify with as I. As Irina Tweedy said, the spiritual life of every one of us is the drama of the soul. It's the crucifixion and the resurrection. What is crucified, of course, is the ego. The resurrection is, I hesitate to say, enlightenment, perhaps. But enlightenment of what or whom? Once you merge into oneness, there is no such thing as I. So who is there to be enlightened? The Sufis use the term fana, which means to efface oneself in the divine. When we have let go, even of this letting go, that is the effacement of self, the effacement wait a minute, that is of effacement itself. Nothing remains except the face of Allah, both seeing and being seen. This is the state or stage of Baqa, or Baqa, which is related to this pathway. Rumi says, a king once asked a dervish, when you have received the ultimate revelation and stand in the presence of Allah, would you please remember me? The dervish replied, when I'm standing in that presence, illuminated by beauty's sun, I don't even remember myself. How can I remember you? I love that. And yet, something does remain, as Irina Tweedy says. There are moments of deep meditation where you find, where you and that are love, and it loves you. It responds. It fulfills you absolutely. But what fulfills you? What responds? God is nothingness, but this nothingness loves you. You are loved, and there is absolute unbelievable bliss. Mind knows nothing about it. These things cannot really be explained. They have to be experienced. Perhaps life is calling you to let go, trust, and find a deeper center within you, even as things around you seem to be falling away. Sometimes we don't have a choice about letting go. Other times we can choose consciously. In either case, using this pathway with your inner self is another way of reminding it with love and respect. All is not as it once was. All is not today as it will be. Eventually, only the face of the One remains. Thank you.
Thank you, Carrie. That was beautiful. You read that very thoughtfully. And you know, as Carrie mentioned, these aren't necessarily ideas to us here gathered in the room. But what I really appreciate about the spiritual path is how I never really grow tired of hearing truth. And I never grow tired of hearing the voice that teaches me. As I'm gently guided to that state of that oneness. And of course, we each have our own way of getting there, as we so often talk about in Awakening Together. And yet it does take a type of courage and a type of daring, if you will, to move to that space. You know, as Nisargadatta has talked about in his book, I Am That, there is a connection between the word and its meaning, between the action and its motive. Spiritual practice is will asserted and reasserted. He or she who does not have the daring will not accept the real when it is offered. Unwillingness born out of fear is the only obstacle. And there is a wonderful little snippet in a book by Vernon Howard called 1500 Ways to Escape the Human Jungle, which I've been reading a lot in the last months. And on page 74, way number 484 out of 1500 says, real courage consists of repeatedly leaping beyond the surface personality, even while fearing to do so, until all fear vanishes. I'll repeat that. Real courage consists of repeatedly leaping beyond surface personality, even while fearing to do so, until all fear vanishes. So, when we sort of reference some of the ideas highlighted in the beautiful narrative that Neil Donald Klotz gave us as it relates to El Baqi, or the enduring, that which remains, when we reference from the first paragraph that she read, where it talks about, you know, even abandon, you know, acting with passion, courage, and even abandon at times. So there's that little moment of sort of leaping, where there's that daring and that willingness, right, to whoosh past the fear, to go beyond into the unknown, right? Whoosh. Daring, willingness, boldness a little bit, right? You know, it's interesting how modern myth and media and movies takes the concept of nothingness and turns it into something that we're supposed to think of as inherently evil. You know, ideas like the abyss. Never go to the abyss. Bad. Fear the abyss. Fear the unknown. That's where hell resides. It's in the abyss. Don't go there. Well, Have you ever thought that's like a trick, maybe? Maybe through that abyss is like where God might be, and this is the ego trying to get you never to do the one thing that would actually lead you beyond the ego. See, that's the deception, of course. There was a movie recently that I watched called Doctor Strange in the theater, and sort of this mystical, magical, sort of good versus evil. Wizards, for lack of a better way of describing it, type of, I think it's from the Marvel comic book universe. And a funny note that I actually work with a woman named Caitlin Strange, and she actually has a brother named Stephen Strange, and the main character in the movie, who is a brain surgeon, who, spoiler alert here, who has his hands hurt in an accident, can't be a brain surgeon anymore. Has the same name as her brother, which is actually a French name, Lestrange, Americanized with the L-E taken off, and it's just strange. But in this movie, there is an evil force called Dormammu that exists in the place that's beyond time, okay, where malice exists and all these negative things. And, of course, he has to face this dark creature and ultimately, you know, try to keep Earth saved and keep him at bay so that Earth doesn't get destroyed, blah, blah, blah. But again, interesting that instead of thinking of the place beyond time as one of love, bliss, joy, enlightenment, true reality, it's promoted that it's filled with, you know, dark things. And this is all, I think, sort of a way to keep the mind from becoming curious about that which is beyond time. You know, to steer your mind beyond, you know, away from that. But it's really through the essence of what we've been talking about here. It's the whole point of this morning is to really leap beyond that, is to go beyond that, to step beyond. And it does require practice. It does. It does require practice. And there's some additional insights in that we get from Niz in that same section. And there's a question. It said, the Westerners who occasionally come to see you are faced with a particular difficulty. The very notion of a liberated man, a realized man, a self-knower, a God-knower, a man beyond the world, is unknown to them. All they have is their Christian culture, is the idea of a saint, a pious man, law-abiding, God-fearing, fellow-loving, prayerful, sometimes even prone to ecstasies and confirmed by a few miracles. The very idea of a Yanani, which is a, like, sadhu, a wise person who's living in a consciousness of awareness, is foreign to a Western culture, something exotic and rather unbelievable. Even when his existence is accepted, he is looked at with suspicion as a case of self-induced euphoria caused by strange physical postures and mental attitudes. The very idea of a new dimension of consciousness seems to them implausible and improbable. What will help them is the opportunity of hearing this wise person relate his own experiences of realization, its causes and beginnings, its progress and attainments, and its actual practice in daily life. Much of what he says may remain strange, even meaningless. Yet there will remain a feeling of reality, an atmosphere of actual experiencing, ineffable, yet very real, a center from which an exemplary life can be lived. Maharaj, the experience may be incommunicable. Can one communicate an experience? You know, and then there's a thought about if you're an artist, you know, the essence of art is communicating, feeling, and experience. You know, and in order to receive that communication, you have to be receptive. And, you know, this, as you exist in this oneness, this consciousness, this true awareness of love that remains after the false falls away, you really do sort of belong to everyone. There's a belonging to the world that occurs to everyone. There's not a separate self. There's no specialness, as the Course in Miracles would call it anymore. You know, and everything is shared. Everything's extended. And, you know, it's true that we can't make someone else into a wise person, because we are what we seek, as Curry was reading. We already are that. We can't ever hope to make someone else wiser or ever hope to extend or give wisdom to another. We can share from what comes through us, and what that speaks to is that same presence in the other person, right? So it resonates, and in that resonation, it builds that collective fire so that even more minds can be awakened. But is that something that I'm doing directly? I don't think so. I don't think that I can be... it's more like an effect as a result of my practice and that courage and that repeatedly leaping beyond surface personality, like, you know, Vernon Howard is talking about. Leaping beyond, you know, and sometimes... like the reading talks about, we can't know exactly or have a conscious choice as to what we are going to be surrendering. Sometimes things are of the false self. Sometimes beliefs, as well as things in our life that represent beliefs, are pulled away from us involuntarily through actions that, you know, we don't directly take. They seem to be just through the environment, the situation of our life. And of course, we don't have the opportunity to have it be a graceful, intentioned process. We have to sort of cooperate with what seems to be occurring in our life at the time. You know, like in the movie, Dr. Strange got into an accident and he lost his ability to do this brain surgery, and he loved doing that. That was his whole life. And he just wondered what possibly there could be of life after that. And so when he went to India, he went to Nepal actually to seek out a guru, a teacher, to find truth. You know, the teacher quickly empties his cup, of course, helps him realize that his cup is full. And, you know, but again, and his mind does shift to willingness once he realizes what's going on and the unwillingness. He doesn't want it anymore. And this speaks to the drive. You know, we gain and we want to build our drive. You know, all of this is only possible when we have that sense of drive, that sense of motivation to do this, to do the leaping, to do the courage, to have that willingness, that desire, that fuel. You know, the Latin root of desire, D, of, sire, God. So desire is really of God. The desire, the true desire, is God, which is us, the true self that remains outside of the false self, within the false self, wrapped up by the false self, clouded by the false self, all of our thoughts, beliefs. You know, in the Buddhist teachings, there are a lot of lists. And one of the lists that's taught is called the Four Immeasurable Minds. And the last of the four immeasurable minds is an element called upeksha, which has to do with equanimity, non-attachment, non-discrimination, and of letting go. And so upa means over, and the iksh part means to look. So you got to, like, you know, to climb the mountain, you got to be able to look over the whole situation, you know, not worry about which side you're on, you know, and let go of that attachment and bring in the divine discrimination. You know, instead of our judgments, our prejudice. And it's not like it's indifference. It's divine detachment. You know, and that really helps grease the process of that willingness to jump beyond the fears that we have come up in the process of us turning within to surrender and be and fully own and exist in that space of who we are. And this is where the practice is, the repeated practice, the necessity for practice. You know, so it's not that true equanimity in that sense, in that being, is cold or indifferent, because there can be kind of a feeling of when we let go of these ideas and sort of outward attachments, if you're not in a state of love, then it's actually just like a type of denial, right? If you're in the state of love and you're truly surrendering, there's a feeling of that love, it's just a non-reaction to the outer. It's a non-reaction. It's a moving with. You know, and all of the situations you encounter are fodder, all of the things. We don't pick and choose certain types of situations anymore that we choose we are going to deal with this way or that way. It's all seen as the same thing. And getting rid of those exceptions is, I think, where the practice really helps, is letting go of all of the different ways that we invent to create exceptions to the rule. You know, the Course teaches a lot about that, too, where you abstract something. It's all the same. You know, this equality that exists, as it's taught here in the Buddhist teaching, sees, you know, everyone is equal, regardless of where they are in life, where they are on the path of awakening, if that is what their desire is. If they have no desire whatsoever for awakening, you know, we're in the perfect situation we're in, and we're guided by what we're guided by for exactly the reason we're supposed to be guided by it. But it's important in that space of being in that connection to the self that we do practice that and see all sides of a situation, and we shed that discrimination and the prejudice completely. And, you know, of course, putting yourself in the other person's shoes helps from that perspective, and becoming one with what we're looking at, being with it. How can we do that? How can we truly understand and love what we're in and a part of and the person we're with or the people we're around or ourselves if we don't allow that to happen, when we get rid of that concept of self? You know, if we don't do that, then the love we have starts to become possessive. You know, it starts to become grasping love. We want to bottle that joy and store it up, or the beautiful breeze in the summer, or the beautiful sight of the snow on the ground. We want to bottle that, and then it becomes possessive, and we become fearful of losing it. You know, in that true love state, that freedom, that flow, that river that's moving, of the beloved, as the Sufi would call it, that is upeksha, as the Buddhist would call it, the true freedom, the true self that is beneath it all. And when I did a sort of intuitive opening of NTI, I came to the ever-popular John chapter 4, the guiding light. And I want to read a little bit from that, because I think it relates a lot to what I think. It's amazing how you can open books that bring you to just the right thing that would have taken you days to search for, to get just the right passage that encapsulate what you want to teach and say. It just saves so much time, just from a pure practical standpoint. The light within is a guiding light. It guides all men. None are absent from its guidance, though many are unaware. Those who are guided by the light but do not recognize its guidance know not where they are or why, and so they look elsewhere for their own salvation and happiness. Since they do not know what is within them, they continue to search and they continue to struggle. When they find what they think is happiness within the darkness, they enjoy it for a time, but then the joy it has brought does seem lost, and they thirst for the joy again. You know, and it goes on to talk about how none of us are really aimless, right? We're never without that guidance. You know, so as we're leaping past the surface personality, as we're moving through these mires that we've created and letting them be purified and moving to remember that which we desire, that we are that which we desire, we are that which we seek, as we're guided to that process, to that movement within, we come upon points where we, you know, we have things we accept and things we do not accept, you know, and we have those blocks that come up, and we don't always welcome it. But it's really assuring to be, you know, sort of reminded by John chapter 4 and NTI here that we really are where we're supposed to be, even if we haven't welcomed it fully. It's just that we haven't welcomed it fully. We are exactly where we're supposed to be in this process. You know, and this is maybe where searching continues. If you haven't yet given up searching, you can still continue to search. But you do get to a point where you stop searching because you realize it is within you. And it becomes more of a process of letting go. And it, just the beautiful images given in these passages about light and how we all have this light because it is within us. We only try to cover it up. We don't actually need to earn a reward, which is a lot of things you'll hear in Hindu teachings about earning rebirths, earning the grace of the guru. I guess in one, if you want to subscribe to the idea of soul evolution, you could see that as true. But this teaching is sort of over all of that. It's like you don't need to earn anything because you already are it. You just need to have the willingness to seek for it and accept and see that you already are it. You already are it. And the more of us that welcome that fundamental idea, not just intellectually, but in our hearts, let go of the possessive nature of love, cultivate that willingness to have the courage to leap beyond the daring, the willingness that comes from true desire that's fueled, that it keeps building, it keeps building. That's the power. That's the true bliss, the self that remains. You know, one thing I've noticed in my own practice and in learning lately is that there'll be things that come up. I develop custom database applications for companies. So I work on the computer a lot, and it involves a lot of creativity with how I have to write these programs to match what the business needs, which is always very particular for each business that I work with. And there'll be expectations that'll be given to me for things that have to be done at certain times, and I'll sometimes get into thinking that I'm pressured to get this done, and then when the program doesn't work right or something happens that I didn't expect, I can get pissed off. And I have this moment of frustration. And when I have that, I realize what I've done at those times is gone down a series of, you know, crystallizing into these different beliefs. Like I have to, you know, the idea of being successful has always been a big thing for me that I've attached a lot of meaning to in my own life as one of my own false self-illusions that I've worked to let go of to discover that I'm already successful, right? There's no need to be. Whatever happens, happens, and be more accepting. So what I've learned to do is work with the energy of, you know, sometimes others can sort of blast sometimes some negative energy to me, like, well, this has got to get done, you know, I need this to happen, or whatever, you know, like clients, right, expectations of clients. And that has, in the past, brought me into stress, right? And in practicing the letting go and looking past, I've been able to remain a lot more just at peace when those situations arise and respond from a place of centeredness by just remembering that and also practicing operating from that still self, realizing that success isn't being threatened here. I can't be unsuccessful. It's impossible. as John chapter 4 reminds us, I am where I'm supposed to be. And what I found is that effect with specifically with one person I'm working with a lot had a really calming effect on this individual. They really just chilled out. And it was really neat to see that, because even though things weren't going perfectly, in the end, it ultimately worked out fine, as it always does. You know, and it's even in that situation, that when the storm or the drama passes, that which remains is still peaceful. You know, whether there is a success or a failure, they fire me, you're gone, you're out of there. They will return to peace. I will return to peace. Everything returns to peace after the storm. And I think the beauty of the teachings and the practice, that as we continue to practice, we don't experience the storms as much anymore. We just have more or less continuous peace. And they become fewer and fewer and fewer, which is, in the last 3 or 4 years, an absolute pattern that has occurred in my life, where I've had a lot more peace much more of the time. And many situations that would have upset me no longer upset me. And I think that if you notice that happening in your own life, it's definitely because you are discovering that real that's beneath it, beneath the false. And again, this is all stuff we've heard 100 times. But I just wanted to send out a reminder that, you know, that abyss that movies and culture and myth try to tell us is evil and bad and the land beyond time full of evil creatures. No, it's just the opposite. The land beyond time is us, the real self, beyond the wrapping, the illusion, the tinsel we try to put on that which is already perfect. And so let us all be guided to this beautiful path in our own way. And just remember that reality exists for all of us equally. We may not be, you know, all equally endowed with the same capacity to grasp it equally at the same time, but it does grow with our desire. It grows with our willingness. It grows with our collective practice of disciplines. That devotion is what it flowers into, the lotus of the devotion, complete self-dedication. As we may look to some among us and say, wow, that person has complete self-dedication. And there are some among us who I do look to see, because they do have that, I believe, complete self-dedication. It is inspiring to me, and I do use that as inspiration. You know, and that type of integrity, that earnestness, that, you know, iron determination to overcome all the obstacles. You know, it's really true that anybody in the West, anybody here in this typically materialistic culture, we really do have the same chance as any Indian person or someone in a ashram. We just have to have the willingness and grow that willingness. And that's why I'm so grateful that we gather here on Sundays, and we gather, you know, many other meetings to fuel and build that desire, because that's so important. We can't get enough of that, I think, the building of that desire. And, you know, this rousing of this interest, I mean, that's what awakens that conscious desire in every mind, you know, oftentimes through pain, but sometimes just through a desire to know truth for the sake of truth. I mean, that was the case with me. I just had a strong desire and burning urge to want to know truth, and I could never explain why it was there. It was just there, and it doesn't ever go away. And so let's help fuel that in each other. You know, let's keep going. And remember that which exists beyond, leaping past our fears, what is waiting for us is an embrace, an intelligent beingness that is alive and real and loving and ever there. So let's all just be in that place, in that place. And so as we sort of, I feel complete with the message for this morning, so let's just take a minute and be with this, be with these thoughts of truth that we've heard today. And if you want to give a donation to Awakening Together, you can. We are supported by our donations, and Barb will put up a link. But let's just take this minute to contemplate and to be in that space. And I'm going to turn it back over to Lynn, and she can play another song. Thanks.
I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. There was no escaping from this ache inside my chest. I got on my knees and begged for mercy, and I raised up my hands, and I knew the answer even as I asked the question of just how much this love demands. And it's everything, everything, nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burnt, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. It's everything, everything, nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burnt, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva.
Yeah, I just saw a message about gratitude come on the board, and I feel that too. I feel that that gratitude coming up within. And we're gonna move into a time where we share and we interact here a little bit, and instead of just me talking, and we hear you all talking too, and sharing your thoughts and what is coming up for you and your aspect of the journey and through your process of discovering the real that remains. And maybe some things that relate to fears that you're wanting to leap past, or maybe experiences you've had of leaping past fears, or anything that comes up. So I'm going to go ahead and turn the mic over to Regina.
Good morning, my friends. Hello. Good to see you all. Nice to be here. Yesterday, as some of you probably know, I talked to Rick Archer on Buddha at the gas pump. And when he first started the interview, my heart leapt with joy when he said something about, what he does at Buddha at the gas pump is he interviews people who are awakening. My heart leapt for joy when he said he interviews people who are awakening, because it seems to me that once upon a time, I heard him say, or I read somewhere, that Buddha at the gas pump interviews people who are awake. Awake. And awake has such a done sound to it, to me. And it's almost as if, you know, then there's some kind of a, you know, a line, like you're on one side of the line or you're on the other side of the line, and there's no space to be just right where you are and it be perfect. It's almost like, you know, you're not awake, and the way some people hear that, yeah, the basic separation again, the way some people hear that, you're not awake, and the way the mind interprets that is, and therefore not good enough. All right. I don't think that's what it means ever. But we know what the mind says. Right? You're not awake and therefore not good enough. Or you are awake and somehow superior. I mean, this is how the mind interprets it. And also, if you're awake, you know, if the mind is saying, you know, you're awake, then there can also be some kind of expectation that you never make a mistake, you never fall back into ego for a moment or a week or a year. I don't know. And one friend recently suggested, in October, recently suggested that we actually change the name of Awakening Together to Awake Together. And I could really feel within me that, you know, ooh, that didn't feel right. That just didn't feel right to change it to Awake Together. And again, I think that's because once, if we declare ourselves awake, then the ego can really use that to start denying things that still need to be looked at. Where in awakening, you know, I may be experiencing, as Jay talked about, this increased peace because I am becoming more and more aware of the real, right? So I'm experiencing this increased peace. It's this ongoing awakening, like a flower opening, but it's okay if there's not full awakeness yet, so it's okay to still have stuff to look at, right? So awakening, to me, seems like a much healthier place to place myself. You know, it still has that beauty in it of awakening, that beauty in it of the flower opening to the sun, that beauty in it of the realization of peace because of the realization of the real, and yet it still gives permission to look at the darkness. It still gives permission for growth. It still gives permission for always new, ever expanding. So I was really happy, really, really happy to hear Rick say, you know, he interviews people who are awakening. And I'm really, really happy to be here with you all, each of us encouraging one another, as Jay said, encouraging one another in our awakening. And I'm very happy that we are awakening together and that we can allow this continuous unfolding together as mighty companions. And I see a couple people have asked about where you can hear the interview. What Rick also told me yesterday is that he's a little backlogged on uploading the interviews. He got behind and he doesn't want to do several all at once, so he's doing like one about every 4 days, and he thought it would probably be around the 16th or so by the time he got the interview with me uploaded. So we'll just need to be a little bit patient. When I notice it or somebody else notices it before me, because I don't remember to check on things like that, let me know. But when it's noticed that it's been uploaded, if you let me know, I will go ahead and post it on Awakening Together and all of that. But yeah, I really loved what Jay was saying, back to that wherever we are is perfect. You know, where we are is perfect. This is exactly where we're supposed to be in this process of awakening. And it is a very, very beautiful flower that's opening up. So thank you, Jay, for reminding us of our innocence in this process. The mic is yours.
Thank you, Regina. Yeah, I was looking for that Buddha at the gas pump interview, and thanks for letting us know that it might be a little bit before he actually puts that up. And I, when you said the word awaken together, I also got kind of feeling inside myself when you said that. Yeah, to me, if it's not a verb, you know, the ing part, you know, you gotta. If you go with the noun, then you've gone into form. Yeah, to me, you know, I am awakened. I have awakened. Let's awaken. There's nothing that's done about awakening. To me, it's more like I've gotten better at flowing through the river with the process. I've gotten better at being a verb and in movement, in spontaneous living. It's not. I don't know what an appropriate analogy would be. But yeah, in truth, fully. You know, if there is something in us that still judges where another's at in their spiritual journey, if we think we can look at another person and say, that person seems to be in fear about X, Y, Z, therefore I'm going to judge them and say I'm more enlightened than they are. Or, you know, like the book Chogyam Trungpa put out about cutting through spiritual materialism, all the sort of ego-based comparisons we go through. And Lynn has corrected, it's a gerund, not a verb. Yes, you're bringing back my 8th grade English knowledge. Yes, thank you. That's the point being that it's happening on an ongoing basis, like Regina was saying. That if I ever encounter in myself, and it's perfectly okay if I encounter this in myself, and as a matter of fact, this is what it's all about, is seeing where these judgments are in any way. I mean, if I'm judging someone that is into Metatron or is still into metaphysics, like studying about the chakras and trying to create physical healing through chakras or something, and they think this is their spiritual path. You know, there was a time when I judged that, or someone that I judge as trying to convert others to something. I could judge that. Or maybe I see a righteous zealot, a religious zealot, judging others, and I then in turn judge them for having judged others. Well, then I'm no different than that person, right? Because I'm just engaging in the same activity they're doing. I'm judging someone who's judging others, wanting to be more right than them. And if I can move into that heart place and be there, I just saw your hand, Lynn. I'll give you the mic in 1 second. Then I'm actually bringing healing. Like, I have a choice. Can I be a presence that is that healing presence? And that is the teaching, right? That is, I may not be teaching another through verbally teaching someone up in front of a stage or on a mic. I'm teaching through my example. I'm teaching through the fact that I'm being this accepting presence in the midst of someone who maybe is judging. And I'm accepting the fact that they're judging, even judging me. And then when someone does share a fear, does go through a fear, do I judge that or do I join with them instead and be in that oneness presence, which actually will then bring healing, having zero judgment at all? Because the fact is we've all been through judgments. We've all been through fears. So turning the mic over to you, Lynn.
And thank you, Jay, and beautiful service this morning and a great topic. And I just wanted to, I posted that it is a gerund. The word awakening is a gerund. It is a verb that has become a noun. So awake is a noun. Awaken is a verb, you know, to do, to awaken. But awakening is a verb that has become a noun, and therefore it is a thing now. It is a thing now, not a not a process. And so and this is what happens, is that we see it as a thing, to awaken, which is really to do something. When it comes right down to it, there is no to do. There is no doing being done. The Course in Miracles says that enlightenment is just a recognition, and this is what it is. I did listen to Regina yesterday at the Buddha at the Gas Pump, And I did absolutely, if I were listening and I didn't know Regina and know what Regina says about being awake, I would most certainly say, this woman is awake. just everything that that you were saying, Regina, everything that was you were expressing was just as awake could be. So despite your protests to the contrary. So I guess my point is that as long as we see it as a process, as long as we see it as something in the future, as long as we see it as a goal, something that I'm going to do someday, that to do part of it is the whole problem. There is nothing to do. There is no place to go. There is nothing to learn. There is nothing to unlearn. The only thing to do is be. Just be and have absolutely no judgment of anything. When I see that everything is the same and there is nothing better or worse or more fun or nothing makes me happier, nothing changes anything. Everything is exactly the same in quality, not in obviously in form, but in quality and in content, everything is exactly the same. It is all the divine working through whatever appears to be. It's the divine appearing in many, many forms. It is not the divine itself. And so I guess just what I'm saying is, it's just open up your eyes and see you're already there. You're here right now. There is no place else to be. And I thank you again so much, Jay, and thank you, Carrie and Regina and everyone. So here's the mic for Ruby or Jay.